Friday interview this week is with Gerald Ratner, once the head of Ratner's, one of the biggest jewellery chains in the world, until he committed one of the most famous gaffes of all time.
We also do this nice sherry decanter. It's cut glass, and it comes complete with six glasses on a silver-plated tray that your butler could bring you in and serve you drinks on. And it's really only cost £4.95. People say to me, how can you sell this for such a low price? I say, because it's total crap.
After that, £500 million were wiped off the value of his company, and he eventually had to sell it. Now, after 7 years of depression, holed up in his home, Gerald picked himself up and he started again. What happened? Well, he now runs one of the UK's biggest online jewellers. So he fought back and he won. I've been speaking to him. He's been remarkably open, frank and honest about the highs and lows of his incredibly colourful life. And I started by taking him back to his youth and asked him as a child, what was it that he wanted to be?
I always wanted to go into the jewellery business, always wanted to be in retail.
Why?
Nothing else.
It's a bit strange for a kid to want to go into the jewellery business.
Well, a lot of my family were doing that. And they were, my grandfather was a watchmaker and my uncles were in the jewellery business. They always, the family was always meddling around with jewellery. So I just wanted to do that.
So when you were working in the jewellery shop, that was a family business.
Yeah.
Was that Ratner's?
It was Ratner's, but it was very small at the time. Yeah, it was only a few shops and it just really started around that time.
How did you grow it? What did you foresee?
Well, what I grew it is basically it wasn't doing very well. It was very upmarket, believe it or not, with chandeliers and bars on the windows as jewelers had then, thick carpets. And actually, you know, I always felt that young people wouldn't want to come in. There was a threshold barrier there. So the way that I grew it is I actually started playing pop music, priced everything very, very clearly because nothing was priced in jewellery shops in those days. Put up posters, marketed it very strongly, put in a lot of offers, and basically shouted as much as we could, which was very unusual for the jewellery business at that time. I mean, there are jewellers doing that today, but it was a very staid industry. We took the diamond rings out of the front window. We put in cheaper earrings and chains.
And were you cutting your margins as a result?
We did. We were cutting our margins. We were offering much, much lower prices, much more lightweight products. We were selling earrings, you know, for a few pounds and that sort of stuff, and making it much more accessible. And at the time, the demographics in the 80s were that people between the age of 16 and 24 for the first time had disposable income. So we were trying to attract that clientele who weren't going into our shops at all.
Obviously I'm not looking for precise numbers, but give me a sense of how quickly or how much that turnover just exploded.
We went from sort of about 80 shops to 2,500 with sales going, it was a phenomenal increase, sales going from a few million pounds to 1.5 billion. And, you know,
Within what period, Gerald?
This was over a 5-6 year period.
Wow.
But I mean, if you're talking about the initial stages, yeah, we were posting 40-50% increases on sales in that first year when we started changing the merchandise, changing the policy. So and for 2 years running, the Ratner shares actually went up more than any other company's shares. So it was a phenomenal success.
So how much were you worth at your height?
Well, the company was making 125 million. And heading for £200 million profit
a year.
In 1991.
A year?
Yes, a year. Because people only think about this as the Ratner's shops, but by then we'd had 1,000 shops in America. We had H. Samuel, Ernest Jones, Leslie Davis, Watchler Switzerland.
Wow.
It was a large group, and we were heading for £200 million profit in 1991.
And you had the big houses, the big cars, did you?
Yeah, I had all the trappings, the planes, the helicopters, the cars and all that stuff, which really didn't mean a lot at the time.
You had your own helicopter?
I did. I don't know why. It was a complete waste of time.
That's ego, isn't it?
Yeah, I was just talking to somebody else who just bought one recently, and they thought it was a waste of time as well. It is, yes. It's just something that you feel that you have to get around that bit quicker.
Can you remember how much that cost?
Yeah, $2.5 million.
Wow.
A Sikorsky it was.
Wow. Yeah. And then the speech.
Then the speech. That, Stephen, that's brilliant. It took you quite a good 5 minutes to get to that. Normally that comes up in the first 10 seconds. But
does it annoy you?
Not in the slightest.
It's part of your story,
isn't it? It's part of my story, and it would have annoyed me 22 years ago when it happened.
Can I say this before we talk about this, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean this.
Yeah.
I can't wait to get to the part where actually we're talking about you fought back, you had the guts to fight back, and you picked yourself up and stood up again. And I'll say that now.
Well, thank you.
But to put that in context, mm-hmm. we need to
absolutely
hear what
absolutely.
Happened. So everything's flying high.
Everything's flying high. I'm on the crest of a wave. We just announced the £125 million profit. I was asked to make a speech at the Albert Hall for the Institute of Directors. It was a great honour.
What year is this?
April 1991. And I spent a lot of time writing a very serious speech. I sent a draft of it round to all my co-directors. One of the directors said it needs a couple of jokes. And so I said, well, the joke that always goes down well is the prawn sandwich joke, where we sell a pair of earrings for under £1, the same price as a Marks and Spencer sandwich, but our earrings probably wouldn't last as long as a sandwich. If I'd have left it at that, which was quite a funny joke, I probably would have got away with it. But the other joke was that we sell a sherry decanter that your butler can serve you drinks on, and it only cost £4.95. Why it's such a low price? Because it's total crap, which wasn't particularly funny, but it was had the most horrendous, as you know, and here we are talking about it 22 years later, had the most horrendous repercussions. The tabloids had a field
day. What was the reaction in the room when you said it?
The reaction in the room was they laughed. They just thought it was a joke. The way it was meant to be, and nobody thought there was anything untoward whatsoever.
So when did you realise it had gone wrong?
Well, when I read it in the press the next day, it was the headlines of the Daily Mirror, front page of the Daily Mirror, front page of the Sun. And if you read that article, and I'm not blaming the press in any way, but it was slanted in such a ridiculously nasty way that I like making fun of my customers, that I said it about my jewellery, which I didn't. I know that's just a minor point.
Well, it's not a minor point, is it?
It isn't.
Say it and they printed it, you were screwed over.
Absolutely, and I should have sued them at the time, but anyway.
Why didn't you?
I didn't want to make... I believed that it was going to make things worse. I honestly believed that it was just going to blow over. I thought it was just going to be, a bit of next day's fish and chip paper. But
so did you not describe everything you sold as crap?
No, I never ever said that. I made one joke, which is the joke that I just told you about, was the sherry decanter, which is incidentally an item that we inherited with H. Samuel, which I never particularly liked. One item, and I made a joke about it because I did feel it wasn't up to much. But and that was it. It was a joke. It was terribly bad judgment on my part. It totally backfired, and I hold my hands up. It was a terrible mistake.
Can you remember the headlines?
Yeah, the headlines in the Sun was Rotteners, and the headlines in the Mirror is your 22 carat gold mugs if you go near his shops. And it just went on from then.
Presumably, well, can you let me inside your head? You're sitting at home, or you're sitting in your office, and you're reading those headlines.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening inside your head?
It's the most horrendous feeling. It's like knives being stabbed in your stomach. This whole business that I'd built up so successfully, my baby, I was so proud of it, was being actually dragged through the gutter. Everybody believed that everything we sold was crap. I looked at the sales figures and I could see that, you know, they were going down, although not immediately. And I had all the staff that had worked so hard and just had their hands tied behind their back. They couldn't sell anything. And it was just, I know nobody's died, but it is just, I was absolutely thought, how the hell could something as stupid as a joke like this have these repercussions and ruin everything that I'd worked all my life for?
And how dramatically did turnover fall?
Well, it started falling about we were always doing well, putting on increases year after year, and suddenly it all went into reverse. And Ratner's was running 30-40% down. Samuels, they discovered their own Samuels as well, so that started hitting at 15%. But although those figures don't sound enormous, that was the profit gone. So we were, instead of making huge profits, we were making huge losses, because that was the cream. You know, when you're dropping those sort of sales figures, your margins, you know, everything falls apart.
And you personally mm-hmm. were the liability.
Absolutely.
It was your fault.
Completely my fault.
Did many people within your business, your company, turn on you?
Well, they were quite good about it. But, you know, you could see that their whole livelihoods, it's not my livelihood that was only wrecked. They could see that their livelihoods were being wrecked. So they were in a very difficult position.
So what was that like in your quieter moments when you were at home? Let's forget about money and business and the profit line. Again, you're a human being and your ego is being hammered.
That's right. That's right. And it's very unsettling. And I read somewhere in the papers that they said Gerald Ratner must be lying in bed in a cold sweat at 4 o'clock in the morning, tossing and turning, not being able to sleep. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. And I thought they were right. Yeah. And, you know, I couldn't sleep, and I was actually becoming a liability.
Were you depressed?
I was depressed. I was very depressed. And in fact, I went to see a psychiatrist that gave me some pills. Now, that was a complete and utter waste of time, because I became like a zombie. You didn't feel as bad about things, but because you were on these funny pills, you lost sort of your edge and your sharpness. So I became sort of just completely useless. And then luckily, I stopped taking those pills.
And obviously, you'll expect me to say at this stage, Gerald, that sometimes that medication, when it's prescribed for the real good reasons by a proper psychiatrist, can really help people.
It can help people,
but
because
it
can help people because you no longer are suffering as much. But in my situation, and often other people that have lost their job or their business has gone bust, they actually need to keep sharp, and it does take the sharpness away. So it's horses for courses. And what happened with me is that I then started cycling, which I still do to this day. And I often say to people, that's the one good thing that came out of it 22 years later, that I cycle 25 miles every day. And it's just fantastic. And that actually alleviated a lot of the stress, just cycling around on a really nice road bike, not some slow mountain bike, really tearing along on a beautiful carbon fibre road bike. And that made me feel and much, much better while I was cycling.
Because were you completely unemployed then at that stage?
I was completely unemployed. I had to leave Ratner's. I used to read in the press. And of course, you believe everything you say in the press, that I was unemployable. They said I was just totally unemployable.
So
somebody who'd built up 2,500 shops, the world's largest jewellery business, overnight, well, in 7 years, was totally unemployable and useless.
So were you sitting watching daytime TV?
I was. That's exactly what I was doing. Lying in bed, the highlight of my day was watching Countdown, which was quite a good programme, actually.
You see, I know you're saying this with a little bit of a smile.
I am now, not then, yeah.
That's a very, very lonely place.
Oh, I would really tell anyone that is the worst thing you can do, is wallow in your own grief. You've got to get out there, however difficult it is.
How long were you in that situation of
7 years.
Devastation, sitting in the house doing nothing?
7 years.
No.
7 years after I left in 1992. It wasn't until 1998 or something like that.
The first thing comes to my mind is, how did you survive that? Because that's a long, long time of intense psychological pain.
Well, you know, if you're in a room with a smell, you don't really smell it till you go out and breathe the fresh air. And I didn't realise what a mess I was in. I just lay there thinking, well, this is it, watching Countdown. At least, you know, I'm alive. But it was then my wife.
Had you much money?
I had absolutely no money whatsoever. I was in debt. I had people coming round asking for money that I owed them.
You did not.
I did.
You'd gone from a helicopter and zillions.
Yeah, because the shares went from £4.50 to 2p. And then I ended up with a tax bill when I left. I had to sell my house. I had absolutely... I know how much I owed. I think I owed about £400,000. I had nothing. I had no house, and nothing. And, you know, I absolutely lost every single penny because all my money was in shares and the shares collapsed on the basis that we went into loss. And it was really an awful time. Anyway, I don't want to sort of start playing the violins because my wife then said, you know, unless, and this was the low point, as often the low point is the turning point. She said, unless you get a job, I'm going to throw you out. So, and I went out and I opened up a health club. Without any money whatsoever.
Oh, how do you do that? Now, come on. You have no money. Debtors are chasing you. So, you know, you need to buy a site. You need to put equipment in that health club. How do you do that if you're bankrupt?
What I did is I found a site. They wouldn't rent it to me because in case I went bust, that the landlord would then have to, it would revert back to the landlord. So I'd had to buy the freehold. The banks wouldn't lend me the money, which is £750,000. But what I did is I put an advert in the local Henley Standard saying that I'm going to open up the club in 3 months' time. And if you join my club, I will waive the joining fee, which was very generous of me considering I hadn't even bought the place. And I got 850 people to sign up to this non-existent club, a club that I hadn't even bought. I had nothing to do with
it. But how did you do that? Because they would have wanted to see it.
Well, I had a drawing of it. I had this fantastic drawing. I mean, if you're drawing, you can draw anything. I've got this beautiful outdoor swimming pool, fabulous jacuzzi, huge gym. I made it, you know, if you're just drawing, you just make it look fantastic.
Yeah, but come on, that's good sale. That's good selling.
It was brilliant selling. And then I went back to the bank with 850 people signed up. And the strange thing is that one of those people was his wife, who'd signed up to the gym. And I don't know whether that helped me, but on the back of the fact that I had 850 people signed up to this non-existent club, he lent me the money and we went ahead and I sold it 3 years later for £4 million in cash. And it was the most wonderful feeling.
Well, it's the story of a man who I instantly admire. Because I don't know you and I don't care how rich you were, but I'll tell you what, someone that fights back from ground zero, I admire.
Well, thank you, Stephen. But it did take me 7 years of doing that, lying around and doing nothing before. And sometimes you need somebody to give you a kick up the backside, which my wife did.
I've got to say that. Now, I'm going to give her one hand, take away with the other, right? Mm-hmm. So I admire that. Stick to the health club. Don't go anywhere near jewellery again because, you know, you're damaged goods with jewellery, I would argue.
Exactly.
And what you do is you go back in to the thing that destroyed you.
Yeah,
and you start an online jewellery business. Now, that's bizarre. That's bizarre psychiatry, I would argue.
Yeah, it was trying to turn a negative into a positive. And what you're saying, you're absolutely right. It was the wrong it wasn't the obvious thing to do. But I often think doing the opposite of what everybody expects or what everybody does often works. And this guy who was a member of the club, his name is Jurek Pierzecki, who owned Goldsmiths, the second largest jewelers, he said, Joe, what are you going to do for your next trick now that you've sold your club? I said, I don't know. He says, you've got to go back in the jewelry business. It was now 2001. And he says, but this time online. I said, but my name stinks in the jewelry business. He said, yeah, I know it does. So I said, you don't agree with me so readily on that point. But the point was that he said he's tried it on the internet and he hasn't had any hits because nobody's ever heard of him. But he says, with your notoriety, if everybody, you know, who everybody's heard of you for the wrong reasons, that will get you a whole load of publicity and it'll get you a whole load of hits on the internet. And he says that, and so his thinking was absolutely right. So that's what I did. I adopted his advice.
And you started Gerald Online?
Yeah, I wanted to start Ratners Online, but I wasn't even allowed to use my own name, so I had to use Gerald Online. Yeah,
they can block you from using your own name.
Well, the company that owned Ratners, now Signet, owned the name Ratners and they didn't want me to use it. Yeah.
And how much is that business turning over? 25 million, I hear.
Well, it's very successful. And, you know, it's a wonderful feeling to get back. It's taken me, that was 10 years ago that we started Gerald Online. And I don't want to sound too cheesy, but you do appreciate things much more second time around when you've lost everything. I don't know, it's human nature.
So even if this is a horrible question, I'm going to ask it.
Go ahead.
How would you describe the quality of your products in Gerald L9?
Well, I never actually, going back right to
the
beginning.
Has no one ever asked you that before?
They always ask me it. They always ask me. I never, ever did sell. That's the point. I never did sell crap in the Ratner
so
stores.
So you've got a really successful business.
Yeah.
Yeah. How would you describe the quality of the product you now sell?
You don't, Stephen. Everything about the jewellery business or any other business, and I know this sounds strange coming from me, will only work if you sell a product that is decent quality at an affordable price. You cannot actually make a living selling tat. People won't buy it. That's why this whole nonsense that this thing follows me around about, you know, always selling crap, which goes on, you know, to this day. I mean, if you look on Twitter, search my name, it's all, you know, I'm the poster boy.
And do
for
you?
I do. I'm obviously a masochist.
Why?
I don't know. I really don't know. Everybody says to me, don't. Don't read the press. They said at the time, don't read the press. Don't go on
These
Twitter.
These are nobody but- saying this about you. And what's interesting about this interview mm-hmm. is you've brought up the fact that people associated you with crap more than I have.
Yeah, that's true. That is
my So you haven't let go of this, have you?
I know, I know.
Are you still hurt by it?
Yeah, I was going to say that it doesn't. I laugh at it. And the turning point for me was when I did do this, which sounds very strange that I do a lot of speeches because of the, you know, making the worst speech of all time. But it does. But I engage the audience with humour and laugh about it. And it's only become tolerable when you start laughing about yourself. You know, for years I was in denial. I was very serious. I was litigious. I was swearing at the press. I was screaming. I was blaming everybody but myself. And now I only blame myself. It was a terrible mistake. I should never have done it. It was maybe I was arrogant or whatever. It was a silly joke to make. It should have realized it backfired. Now I accept that. And it's not anything like as painful as it was. But, you know, when people have this misconception about me, it is still pretty bad. Yeah.
Well, we all have an ego and we all like to be liked. And I just wonder if what's resonating with people listening to this interview is that we are all, every one of us, no matter whether we're in the public eye, private, no matter whether we're an electrician, a bus driver or a multimillionaire, we're potentially one mistake away from disaster. Now, that's scary in life.
It's extremely scary. It's very delicate balance that we all walk, and it, you know, can all be taken away from us. And a lot of people come up to me and say, "There, by the grace of God, go I." And that's true. I was the unlucky one, or maybe I deserved it. I don't know. But don't take it all for granted, because it's not nice when it all gets taken away. You know. Things.
What are your priorities in life now?
My priorities in life are my family. They're very important to me, not getting into the mess that I got in before to make sure that they're okay, and enjoying myself.
Are you happy in your own head?
Yeah, I'm happy. I mean, you know, people who turn around and say, "Oh, well, I'm walking on air, I'm happy," is not necessarily true, because nobody's happy every day of the week. You always have bad days and good days, but I have a lot of really good days and very happy, much more than I did after I made the speech. So yeah, by and large, I'm extremely happy and very grateful.
Have you got this lust to be as big as you were, to have a massive business throughout the world?
That whole lust is completely gone, has completely left me. I don't know whether it's an age thing. When I was in my 30s, everybody wants to rule the world, they want to drive forward, and you're never happy because there's always somebody else doing it better than you. It doesn't make you happy. I am so not ambitious today. I do my cycling every day. I go around the country doing speeches. I have a very relaxing lifestyle. I could run my business from a deck chair in Southend, because that's what the internet's all about. And it's very balanced. But the most important thing is that I do have time for enjoying myself with the family and stuff like that, which is not what I did when I was driving the Ratner's group forward.
And do you think anybody that has the same entrepreneurial spirit as you, Do you think it's relatively easy to set up a business on the internet and make it massive?
It's not easy, no. And people seem to think the internet is some sort of panacea, that everybody's going to make a profit. You know, business is a little bit like art. It's a work of art. If you look at a canaletto of the Grand Canal in Venice, it's a wonderful vision that the artists have, but it's the detail that makes it. And it is a boring, long slog of getting the product right, and being in there every day and making sure that, you know, everything goes right. There is nothing easy about it at all.
Do you know, I've enjoyed talking to you, and it's not for me to give you advice, but here's what I just wish you would do. Stop reading what the idiotic lunatics are saying about you on Twitter.
I think that's very good advice, Steve. Thanks for that.
You sound like a nice guy, sir, and I'm glad that you're doing well.
That's
I'm
very
glad
kind
that
of
you survived this, and thank you for talking to me.
I appreciate your kind words. Thank you very much, Stephen.